If you want to turn to Romans chapter 1, we're going to be looking at a few verses there, a whole section actually there, beginning in verse number 8. One of the other things that is always enjoyable is studying one of the people from the Bible and learning from them. You know, there are a lot of very interesting personalities in the Bible. Some that are like us, and some that are like other people we know, and some that are different from us and different from others that makes that interesting. One of probably the most famous, certainly, and probably one of the most popular and most well-liked people in the Bible is Paul. As bad as he started out, when we first read about him holding the garments of those who stoned Stephen, to see his life change and turn around, and to see the man who proclaimed himself to be the chief of sinners become the most zealous of apostles and write half of the New Testament. To see that occur gives us hope, because it helps us to know that no matter where we started out in life, we can get it straightened out and get it right and go down the right path. And that's a good thing. And we look to those people in the Bible who have accomplished great things to be examples for us. In 1 Corinthians 11 and verse 1, Paul says, "Be ye followers of me, even as I also am of Christ." So we understand that it's not wrong for us to look to others to be examples, to be our heroes, if you will. And when we look for heroes, we need to look to the Bible for those heroes. So many times we look at people who can play a sporting event. We think, "Oh, wow, that's my hero." Well, there's nothing spectacular about that person except for a physical ability. They may be a rotten individual when it comes to their attitudes and their spirit and their heart. They may be wicked. But just because they can play a game, we go, "Oh, what a hero." We put the wrong people on the field. We look at actors and actresses. "Oh, he's my idol," or "She's, I love her." Why? What is it about that individual that makes them so special? Or we may look to a particular politician and say, "Oh, that politician, wow." But when we're looking for heroes, we need to be looking for godly heroes. The best place to find those godly heroes is in the Bible. And those are the people who are showing us how we should live our lives. And so it is with Paul. He's always been a hero of mine. I wish I had the stamina that he had to do the things that he did and risk the things that he risked and the danger that he faced and the boldness that he had. There's so many characteristics about him that make him somebody really worthy of being looked up to. Now, that's not to say he was perfect. He wasn't. He himself acknowledged that he wasn't. He said that the thing he wanted to do was the very thing he didn't do, and the thing he didn't want to do was the very thing he wound up doing. We've all been there. And that's another one of the things that makes it so nice to look at him, because we said, "Man, he looked like what a hero." And he never did anything wrong, but he admits, "Yes, I did. Yes, I do. I still struggle with that. I do the wrong things sometimes." But as we look in Romans chapter 1 and beginning in verse 8, we're going to notice some of the attitudes and characteristics of Paul that are good attitudes and good characteristics. Between verses 8 and verse 16, Paul uses that little word "I" 13 times. 13 times. Now, he doesn't spend a lot of time talking about himself, but in this little section, he uses the word "I" 13 times, as well as using "me" and "my" several times. So this is one of the sections where we find out some things about Paul. What does he think of himself? And what does his relationship with God? What's his relationship with the church like? Some of those kinds of things that we'd wonder about since we've never actually met the man. What kind of person was he? And we're going to see some things that certainly are worthy of imitation. Some things that we need to put into our lives as we look at this. And this is, you know, this isn't perhaps going to be an incredibly stirring thing here where we get all emotional about it, but we're going to understand that being a true Christian means having the right characteristics in our lives. If we don't have the right characteristics in our lives, we fall into the danger of becoming hypocrites. And we certainly don't want to do that. So we're going to look at this. First, we'll just read through the section quickly, and then we'll come back and hit the high points. First, I thank my God through Jesus Christ for you all, that your faith is spoken of throughout the whole world. For God is my witness, whom I serve with my spirit in the gospel of his Son, that without ceasing I make mention of you always in my prayers, making request if by any means now at length I might have a prosperous journey by the will of God to come unto you. For I long to see you, that I may impart unto you some spiritual gift, to the end you may be established, that is, that I may be comforted together with you by the mutual faith both of you and me. Now I would not have you ignorant, brethren, that oftentimes I purposed to come unto you, but was let hitherto, and the word let there means hindered, actually, as opposed to us thinking of let meaning allowed, that I might have some fruit among you also, even as among other Gentiles. I am debtor both to the Greeks and to the barbarians, both to the wise and to the unwise. So as much as in me is, I am ready to preach the gospel to you that are at Rome also. For I am not ashamed of the gospel of Christ, for it is the power of God unto salvation to everyone that believes, to the Jew first and also to the Greek. Okay, so we see a section here. He's just talking to the church at Rome about how he feels about them and what his plans are and what he wants to do. So we see some insight. You know, one of the things when people study history, one of the things that they love to find are personal letters that individual has written. Because many times in those letters, their feelings and their thoughts were revealed. And if you look at any of the biographies that are written about people from historical times, one of the things that they often will do is they'll quote letters, or they'll mention a letter. He wrote this letter to so-and-so, or she wrote that letter to so-and-so. And that's an evidence that this is what they were really thinking and really feeling, because this is what they wrote down themselves. And so here we have a little cutaway section here in just these few verses, where Paul lets us peek into his life a little bit to see what he's planning to do and what he is doing. So let's begin in verse 8 then. The first I, he says, first I thank my God. So here we see an attitude of thanksgiving, an attitude of gratitude, if you will. And you want to underline all of these I's as we go through them, and the word that goes with them. So in this case, you want to underline I, and then you want to underline thank. I thank. But what about you? Can you say that? Can you say, I thank? Or would it be more appropriate for you to say, I grumble, or I complain? Paul said, I thank. He has a thankful attitude, and he always is thankful for the other Christians that are around him. He says, I thank my God through Jesus Christ for you all. And then he mentions something specifically that he's thankful for, that your faith is spoken of throughout the whole world. So he says the people in Rome are known all over the world for their faith. Isn't that something good to be known for? Wouldn't we like to be known for that? He's not the only one here that has some qualities that are admirable. But they have some faith, and he's thankful that their faith is known throughout the world. It's hard to get known throughout the world for something unless that something is true. Now, there are times, I suppose, where falsehoods spread, but the fact of the matter is, most of the time, you're known pretty accurately. It may not be how you want to be known, but it's how you are known. When we see in the letters to the seven churches in Revelation that God talks about how those churches are known. And then he talks about how he truly sees them. And sometimes there's a difference. Now Paul here mentions though that this church is known for being faithful. And he thanks God for that particular thing. Then in verse 9 he says, "For God is my witness, whom I serve." So here's another aspect of Paul. He's a servant. He's got a servant's heart. He realizes who's in control and who's not. We need to learn that. We're studying that with the boys in class this morning. We studied a little bit about the importance of obeying God and serving Him, even at those times where it's not something that's pleasant. It's easy when it's something that you want to do anyway. But it's hard when it's something that you don't want to do. And the same way with being obedient to parents or anything else. We have to learn to obey at all times. But notice what he says, "whom I serve with my spirit." Another translates that, "whom I serve with my whole heart." You know, we talk about being wholehearted. Jesus talked about loving God with all of our mind, strength, soul, and heart. He got with our whole being. And so Paul says, "I serve my God." Now notice though the qualifier there, "in the gospel of His Son." Now you've got a lot of people who want to serve God, but they want to serve Him the way they want to serve Him. But if you want to truly serve God, you're going to have to serve Him in the gospel of His Son. Because that's the only way that He accepts that service. Remember Jesus saying, many will say to me on that day, "Lord, Lord, we did many wonderful works in Your name." And they list the works that they did. And they did some wonderful works. But He said, I never knew you. Depart from me, you workers of iniquity. I never knew you. Then he goes on in verse 9 to say, "I make mention of you always in my prayers." Or in other words, "I remember you in my prayers." What about you? Do you remember others in your prayers? Now there are certainly different levels of prayer. There is the superficial level of prayer that a lot of people, "thank you God for this food, hope it's good, let's eat." And then there's the selfish level of prayer where everything is, well, "God, give me this and give me that. And I want this and I want that." But then there's also an unselfish level of prayer where we're praying on behalf of other people. Where we're actually becoming supplicants. In other words, we are begging God on other people's behalf. Instead of being selfish and thinking only of our own needs and wants, we begin to think about other people and pray for other people. You know, one of the best ways to change your attitude about someone else, particularly someone who has harmed you or someone you're angry with, someone who's hurt you in some way, whether it be physically or emotionally, whatever, is to pray for that individual. And pray for them by name to God. And you'll be amazed at how over a period of time your attitude toward that person will change. If you will honestly pray for their best interests to come about, you'll actually pray for them with a godly kind of love, where you're concerned for them and want what's best for them, despite the fact that they've hurt you. and in the process pray for strength to forgive those individuals who have sinned against you. You'd be surprised how much that can change you. But Paul talks about how he remembers them in his prayer. So being concerned about others and showing an interest in others, remembering others. And this is the thing, I find this hard sometimes. You know, we have our prayer request list, and I wish we could get it together earlier so we could actually have it, you know, printed out, typed out, and made copies of so we could keep that with us through the week to be able to remember the people who had special requests from one week to the next. Because it's hard, especially we have, you know, 20 or 30 things on that list. It's hard to remember on Tuesday or Thursday. Well, what was it? Now, somebody was going to have surgery. Who was that was going to have surgery? I wanted to pray for them, and I'm forgetting who it was. And we have that problem remembering sometimes. But we need to remember one another in prayer. Now then, he says in the latter part of that, verse 10, he says he also makes requests in those same prayers. One translation even says, I pray that I might have a prosperous journey by the will of God to come unto you. So he makes a request that he might have a prosperous journey to come to them. And again, you notice he mentions by the will of God. It's always a concern about what God's will is first and foremost. And that goes back to the fact that he said, I serve God. If we serve God, then we're going to constantly be concerned about what His will is and not always just what I want. Paul wanted to go see them, but he knows that if it's against God's will, he's not going to ever go to see them. Now, Paul does get to go to see the Christians at Rome, perhaps not in the way he had hoped. He goes shackled and chained as a prisoner to get to go see the Christians at Rome. But see, we don't always know God's plan. And notice he says that he has been hindered up to this point in verse 13. He says, but was let hitherto. And again, that word let in the era of the King James time actually means hindered. He had been hindered up to this point. He hadn't been able to go see them, but he wants to. And he wants to have a prosperous journey to come to them. So he again has some hopes. You know, a lot of us get to the point, and it may not be a continual point, but just from time to time, we get discouraged, we get depressed, and we get to the point where we just don't have any hopes or dreams left. Paul didn't get to that point. He hoped for things. He had a plan for the future and a hope for the future of how things could work out. We don't want to get too far ahead of ourselves because the plan is going to come in later on. Then he says in verse 11, I long to see you. He had a desire. You know, sometimes we just kind of live through life, ho-hum, well, whatever happens, happens. And we don't really have any desires. We don't even have any wants. And we say, well, it's because every time I want something, it doesn't happen. And so it gets crushed. And our heart gets crushed. And we quit wanting things. Or maybe it's because everything we ever got, we wanted. Everything we ever wanted, we got. So, you know, what's left to want then? But Paul here, he expresses, I long to see you. Now I want us to notice then, the next I is that I may impart unto you some spiritual gift. You see, Paul doesn't want to go see the people in Rome for his own selfish desires. I'm sure he wants to see them. He wants to enjoy being with the other Christians there. But the reason he wants to come is so that he can give them a gift. You see, we see that Paul is a giver. Paul has a giving spirit. Now, there are really only two kinds of people in the world, those who give and those who take. That's it. Now, which kind are you? Paul wanted to go so that he could give. He didn't want to go just so he could take something from them. He wanted to go so that he could give them something. So we need to have that kind of an attitude of being giving. He goes on to say then, in verse number 12, that is that I may be comforted together with you by the mutual faith, both of you and me. Here he talks about his desire to have fellowship with them. You know, there is nothing sadder to me than a Christian who spends their life never having fellowship with other Christians. That is one of the most wonderful blessings that we have here on this earth, is the opportunity to fellowship with others of mutual faith. And yet, there are some who shut themselves off from that. I don't know why. I'm sure there are various different reasons. Some people may be shy. Some people may just be kind of reclusive. Some people may do it because they don't like the other people who are Christians around them for some reason or another. Some may do it for health reasons. There are a lot of different reasons that people shut themselves off from the fellowship. But notice what Paul says. This is something that brings comfort. Our mutual faith is something that should comfort us and encourage us when we're together, instead of something that should discourage us. We need to be looking forward to the times with anticipation at those times that we're going to be able to get together with other Christians, rather than looking with dread at, oh, we've got another church thing we've got to go to. We've got to remember that the closest that we get to heaven on this earth is when we're fellowshipping with the saints. When we're together with other Christians, that's as close to heaven as it's going to get here on earth. We need to take advantage of every opportunity we have in that regard. Then we notice in verse number 13, we've got three I's here. The first he says, now I would not have you ignorant, brethren. So, first of all, he doesn't want to keep them in the dark. He doesn't, you know, some people have this attitude of, I don't want you to know anything that more than what you have to know. But Paul, and this is about the only time he uses this phrase, I would not have you ignorant. He doesn't want people to have the wrong impression about things. You know, most of the time, fear is a result of ignorance. And most of the time, false doctrines and false teachings are the result of ignorance. And many times, gossip and rumors are the result of ignorance. No wonder Paul says, I would not have you ignorant. Now, some people have misquoted this and said, Paul was saying he didn't want to have them, those ignorant brethren. But what he says is, I would not have you to remain in ignorance. I want you to know some things. You see, they may have been misinformed or had some misinterpretations of the situation. The fact that Paul had not yet been to see them might have made them think that he didn't want to come see them. And so he says, you know, brothers, I don't want you to be confused about this or to be ignorant about this. Let me explain something to you. And then he goes on to say, oftentimes I purposed to come unto you. Paul planned. He purposed. You know, there are some people who say, well, you know, if I'm going to let God have His way with my life, then I don't need to ever plan for anything. I don't need... And they look at James, and James says, well, woe unto him that says, you know, go, today or tomorrow I'll go and do this and that and the other thing, and then I'll stay there a year, and then I'll do this. And they say, see, the Bible teaches us we shouldn't make any plans. That's not what James teaches there. James says you shouldn't make plans and leave God out of those plans. That's what his point is in James, where he talks about go to now, ye who say today or tomorrow we'll go in the city and sell and buy and get much gain. He said, don't leave God out of your plans, because you don't know for sure what's going to be happening on the tomorrow. But that doesn't mean don't ever plan anything, We need to make plans. And Paul said, oftentimes I purpose to come unto you. He made plans on several occasions to go to Rome. But they didn't always work out. Now many of us, if we made plans to do something one time and it didn't work out, we say, oh, well, forget it. I'm not going to try that again. That didn't work. We'll give up on that and try something different. But Paul didn't do that. The first time when his plan didn't work out, he went back to the drawing board and made plans again. And when that didn't work out, he made plans again. Now, oftentimes, I don't know how many times that is, but oftentimes it's got to be more than three times. He didn't say twice I tried. It's got to be, oftentimes I purposed to come. And he had this purpose. He had this plan. He wanted to go, but he didn't get to. He says, I was hindered hitherto. But he made plans. He had a purpose for his life. Many of us are just bobbing up and down through life's waves like a boat without a sail, without a rudder, and without any oars or a motor or anything else. We're just floating. Wherever the current takes us, that's where we'll go. I read recently about some rubber duckies that fell out of a boat. And this has been over 10 years ago. And they're still floating. They've helped scientists a great deal to chart the ocean currents. They've circled around the Pacific Ocean. Some of them landed in Japan. Some of them landed in Alaska and down the west coast of America. Then they flowed up and went through up through the ice pack around the Arctic and came down. Now they're coming down. They're expected to land in England sometime this coming spring. But they had no purpose. They had no goal. They weren't going anywhere. They're just floating. God created each of us to have purpose and meaning in this life. And we need to find that meaning. We need to find that purpose and fulfill it. We need to follow through with it. Then he says at the end of verse 13, that I might have some fruit among you also, even as I have had among other Gentiles. So here again he says, he wants to have some fruit. What does he mean by that? Well, he's hoping to reach others for Christ. That's what fruit is. He's hoping to help them grow. He's hoping to help the church there to become more established. He mentioned already that he wanted to impart some spiritual gifts so that they could be established better. And now he's saying, he wants to have some fruit among them. He wants to come to Rome and convert the whole town. That's what he wants. He wants to have some fruit. So see, he was committed to coming and doing and then sharing that with others around him. We need to do that as well. We need to want to have fruit. Then in verse 14, I am debtor, both to Greeks and barbarians, both to wise and unwise. Paul saw himself as being one under obligation. He saw a debt that needed to be paid. He said, I am a debtor. He knew he had an obligation to these individuals to share the gospel with them. And then in verse 15, he says, so as much as in me is, I am ready to preach the gospel. Are you ready to teach the gospel? Or when somebody asks you, I'm going to have to call one of the elders, or I'm going to have to call the preacher, or I'm not sure. I don't know what the Bible says about being saved. How do we know what to do if we don't know what the Bible says about how to be saved? We go back. Paul said, I would not have you ignorant. Don't be ignorant of what the Bible teaches. We need to be prepared to give an answer when somebody asks us. We need to be ready. We may, may not be called on to preach, but all of us are called on to answer a question about the Bible or about the church or about salvation. We're going to be called on by somebody we're going to be asked a question, and we need to be ready to teach, even if we're not ever going to preach. We need to be ready to teach. Paul was ready. He was prepared. Are you prepared? If not, you need to get prepared. You need to study and learn what the Bible has to say about these things and where it's found. If you need to, write your little cheat sheet. Make some verses. Okay, baptism's in this verse. Repentance is in this verse. Belief is in this verse. You can find those things. But be ready. Be ready to teach. And then in verse 16, finally, he says, "For I am not ashamed of the gospel of Christ." This is the first thing that he said he's not. Everything else, the things that he was, or that he wanted, or that he was, but this is the first, he said, "I'm not. I'm not ashamed of the gospel." We cannot live life as Christians and be ashamed of the gospel. If we're ashamed of the gospel, Christ is going to be ashamed of us. Because part of the gospel is that we must confess that He is the Christ. And He said, "If you confess me before men, I'll confess you before my Father. But if you will not confess me, then I will not confess you before my Father. If you're ashamed of me, I will be ashamed of you." If we're ashamed of His gospel, we can't very well be ashamed of it all our lives and then get to the pearly gates and say, "Okay, I'm not ashamed anymore. Now I want you to use that gospel to save me." A little late then. We need to live a life of shamelessness. Not shamelessness in regard to sin like most of the world does. I tell you what, our society is, they're to the point where they are shameless when it comes to sin. We should be ashamed when we sin. But we need to be shameless in regard to the gospel. We shouldn't be ashamed of it. I saw a particular fellow who used to be a preacher who's now running for political office. And he was asked the question, well, you're a Christian, and using the loose sense of the term, but by the interviewer, "You're a Christian. What about the Jews and the Muslims then? Are you saying that they're not going to heaven because they don't believe in Jesus, that Jesus is the Son of God?" And he hem-hawed around and beat around the bush and said, "Well, I know that I have to believe in Jesus. I don't know about them." That's hogwash. Jesus said, "I am the way, the truth, and the life. No man comes to the Father but by me." See, it sounds to me like that fellow was ashamed of what he claimed he believed. Now, I understand he's a politician and he's trying to get votes, and he knows if he says, "Well, you know what, if you don't believe in Jesus Christ, you're not going to go to heaven," that the Jews and the Muslims and the atheists and all the rest aren't going to vote for him. But is it worth getting elected at the risk of losing what you claimed you believed in by being ashamed of it? We can't be ashamed of the gospel of Christ. It is the power of God to save. That's what Paul said. If we are ashamed of the power of God to save, then you better find your own way to heaven. Because that's the only one that I've ever heard of, by being obedient to the gospel of Christ. If you're here and you have a need to respond to the invitation, either in initial obedience to that gospel, or as a Christian who has failed to live up to the standards that are set forth in that gospel, you may need to respond as we stand and as we sing.